In this episode of Ideas, I talk with Skip Pritchard about finding purpose, the excuses we make, the people that we spend our time with, and much more. All right, here we go. All right, today's guest is Skip Pritchard. He has interviewed and studied thousands of the world's most successful people, has been the CEO of complex global organizations, and is a popular keynote speaker. And today he's here to talk about his best-selling book, The Book of Mistakes, 9 Secrets to Creating a Successful Future. Skip, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Adam, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I got to start off by saying I love the book and love how it was written as a fable. And I just want to start off by asking you, so many leadership books out there are not fables, they're more factual case studies. Why did you choose to write this one as a fable?
Oh, it's a great question. And I think there's probably three main reasons, logically, and then maybe some emotionally. But the first is we remember more with a story. Stanford marketing professor Jennifer Aker, I remember her saying this and it stuck with me. Stories are remembered 22 times more than facts alone. And it's really true. I know if you're telling stories, if you hear a speaker, if you go to some conference, you remember the story. You might not remember the exact chart. That's why we take pictures of it with our phone. I know I do.
So
we remember more. The second reason is that we empathize more, which of course may make us remember it more, but Paul J. Zak, I interviewed him. He's the founding director of the Center for Neuroeconomics. I think I got that right. Center for Neuroeconomics Studies. And he teaches that our brain actually increases the production of oxytocin, a hormone. And that actually makes us more empathetic to the storyteller. And if you're empathetic, you're going to accept the message more. And I also know, you know, if you even watch stories like Shark Tank or some kind of thing, you watch entrepreneurs, the ones that tell the best stories are the ones that get the most investment, I've noticed. So you're empathizing, you're kind of there. And I think, Adam, the last reason is we're bored a lot of times with those kind of books. I know. I am. I
mean, yes. There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. And I read them constantly, and some are really done very well. But sometimes we just want a story. And I wanted to write this in a way. I love the Nelson Mandela kind of quote. He said, don't address their minds, address their hearts. And I know a lot of us just are bored. And I wanted a book that you could either read for the information and the nonfiction content, or that you would just enjoy, you know, just, hey, I read this book on a plane. And I wanted to kind of write both. And that was the goal in trying to do this. So I think that's those are the reasons I kind of wrote it as a fable, as a story. Wanted it to be engaging and not just another leadership book.
Those are all really important points. I think that all of us can really apply to our own businesses, whether we're writing books or whether we're speaking in front of audiences or marketing for our businesses. I really like that Mandela quote you mentioned there as well. But going back, when you were coming up with this book idea, The Book of Mistakes, and I mean, I don't know, how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, I initially give credit to Qantas Airlines. I've never said this before in an interview, but I was flying to Australia and there was no good movie selection on the flight.
And to write a book.
What am I going to do? So I opened it up and I started writing a blog post that I thought, oh, I'm just going to write this as a story. And it just evolved into this book, which 80% of the book was written on that flight. Now, it was then I would edit and change and move and add forever and ever and ever up until the very last day when the publisher is like, no, we need this manuscript.
Sure. So going back to that time, did you picture yourself putting out a different book first? Or, I mean, being in this moment and just writing the book of mistakes, do you think that, I guess what I'm trying to get is, do you think we learn more from our mistakes than our successes? Because there's so many books out there on people's success and learning from successful people. Was there intentionality with making this first book of yours about the book of mistakes?
Well, it's true. Adam, I think that I've learned over the years that people identify more of a struggle than success. I mean, when you meet somebody and they say, you know, I'm a multi-billionaire, I'm an Olympian, everything's, my life has been charmed. That's not going to draw me in. When you meet somebody who's overcome a horrible challenge, a health challenge, a handicap, unbelievable depression or something that happened in their life, mental abuse, whatever it is, overcoming stories, I think, draw us in more than successes. So struggle over success. And I think mistakes drew me in because I'm always interested in asking people in interviews about their mistakes, about their challenges, about their hardships, mm-hmm. because that's what forges you, right? That's what makes you who you are. And some people break under that pressure and some people thrive. So I was oriented toward the mistakes as a way of humanizing mm-hmm. a lot of people I interview.
Sure.
And I just gravitated toward that in this story for that reason.
That's really important. Yeah. And as you mentioned that, I'm thinking about that. Yeah. I've learned a lot more from my mistakes than my successes for sure. And you also say in the book that a huge mistake is made when we find ourselves working on someone else's dream instead of our own. And I think that's a really important point. You also kind of allude to, but before we can work on our dreams and decide what to do, you also say that we should determine who we want to be, kind of backing up and defining what success means to us. But in your own thoughts, in your own words, what does that look like exactly? And what advice can you give to listeners who are trying to find their purpose? And I know you just from reading your work online, and you have a really important take on leadership, and wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, there's so much there, Adam. And I think, yeah, the very first mistake is working on someone else's dream instead of our own. And so often in life, we find ourselves swept away into life. We're not really figuring out what we want to do, but we've majored in something, or we've moved into a job, or whatever's happened. And we thought, well, how did I get here? And when we analyze it, it's because, well, the teacher encouraged us to go this way. Our first boss maybe encouraged that or discouraged something else. And we didn't take that time to be deliberate and to really think about, well, who do I want to be and how do I want to get there? And so wherever we are in life, the book offers an opportunity to just reflect and say, wait, where am I? Is this where I want to be? Is this deliberate? And there's an old saying, when the why becomes big enough, the how becomes automatic. And what I've tried to do is focus here on the why, right? Many people can figure out the how on their own. The how is very individual.
Yeah.
The why is a passion that you have to have and the process that you have to go through. Yeah. Now, the suggestions I have for people who are struggling with that and trying to figure out how to find their why and their purpose is to look at a few things, right? Look at their energy. Where is your energy going up? What gives you energy? And then where are you drained? Because so often we will find that we're not in our purpose when we're in an area where we're just drained every day. We're going to something and we're just drained. Well, what is that? Let's tune into that feeling of energy. And if I'm doing something that doesn't even feel like work, like, wow, that just felt so good. I didn't even feel like I was working. Your energy's there. Then what is that? And what could that be? And is there something you could make a career out of? Is there something that you could kind of expand on that?
That's really important.
Energy. Yeah. Watching your energy to me is so important.
And talking about purpose and people realizing their current reality, where they are, and thinking about where they want to go. A lot of times, excuses, whether valid or not, will come up. In your dealings and your consulting, talking to people, are there certain excuses that come up again and again? And have you given advice to these people that would fix them as far as excuses are concerned?
Well, one of the mistakes in the book is making excuses, and it is a very common thing for all of us to do, right? Because we don't have to take accountability. We don't have to look in the mirror if we have an excuse. And and you know what we all do? We're well-intentioned, so we try to encourage people when they make excuses. We tend to be sympathetic. Oh, that's too bad. I'm so sorry. Instead of nailing them with the fact that it's an excuse, let's be accountable. And I mean, I've seen excuses, right? I want to start a business, but I don't have enough money. I want to do this, but I don't have enough experience. I don't have enough education. Negative relatives. Taxes are too high. The weather's really bad. I'll do it once I overcome this. And oh, you know, I'd really start running once my knee gets better. Excuses. In fact, one of the things that's amazing is you can judge somebody's creativity by the creativity they come up with in their excuses.
that's a good point. I'm going to start paying attention to that.
It's amazing. It's like, hey, if you can be that creative and that good with your excuse, and boy, the story you just told yourself is so good that even you're believing it, maybe we could turn that around and do it in a different way. So
that's really good.
Yeah, I think excuses are good. But if you look underneath of the excuses, I think that's where you really see something that's quite interesting, which is underneath of every excuse is a fear. And that fear is what is stopping people from moving forward. That fear of success, that fear of failure, it could be something there. And it's studying what those fears are and then overcoming them is an art. And in fact, I have a great resource that I'd recommend on that.
If I was going to ask you, do you have any tips for fighting these fears? So yeah, go right ahead.
Well, one tip would be to read a book called The Bravest You. I don't know if you've heard of this book.
I've heard of this book. That's actually my book.
What a coincidence. Because Adam, you nail these fears so clearly in the book that it really dovetails with excuses. And look at the excuse, look at the underlying fear, and you give strategies of how you overcome them. And I encourage people to, and I imagine most of your listeners know your work, but that process that you share, the stages of the bravery process, I think it's important for people to map out, where am I on this chart right now? And it may be different places for different parts of your life, but you can overcome excuses. And then who do I look at and who do I want to model myself after that may be different? You know, I love stories like we think about Richard Branson. We think about like Virgin Airlines and, oh, he has this airline. But I had read a story about Richard Branson when he was on an island in the Caribbean and his flight was canceled. Now, most of us would sit there and moan about it, tweet about it, complain about it. Richard Branson thought differently. He walked over. He found out how much it would cost to charter a plane. He found out that cost. He divided the number around. And then he got up and he said, does anybody want to go right now? And here's the cost. And he found enough takers and they flew back to the U.S. It's that kind of creativity. And here's the point. He could have said, well, I have no experience in this. I can't charter a plane. I don't have money, education, whatever to do this. But he just did it. He didn't find excuses. He looked for ways around it. He looked for ways through it.
It's really good. A really good reminder that, I mean, even on the daily basis, people can come up with excuses, myself included. None of us are exempt from that, immune from that. And it's a daily reminder that we must go and do. Same with these podcast listeners, if you're listening in and you do nothing with these ideas, nothing with these tips that we talk about, then nothing's going to change. So it really does all depend on the action. I know you're a fan of Jim Rohn. He said you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And talking about excuses, and that only makes me think about self-talk. And in my experience, being around negative people make me look at the world in more negative ways. Being around positive people makes me not only view the world in more positive ways, but myself more positively. And I just wanted to ask you, I'm guessing you agree with that statement, but how have you seen that played out in your own life? And what challenge can you give listeners here to examine the people around them? And how can it change their lives for the better? Kind of a loaded question, but I think positivity will always win out. And our lives can be negative even when we don't realize, because we get in this bubble that can be negative. And I think it's really important that we change. So what are your thoughts on that quote from Rohn?
Well, I do love Jim Rohn. I learned tremendous amounts from him and attended so many of his seminars that I could walk up to him and quote large sections of them. And I also love the quote that Les Brown gives on the same topic. Les Brown said, if you run around with 9 losers, pretty soon you'll be the 10th loser. And I think it fits as a follow-up. One of the mistakes in the book, mistake 4, surrounding yourself with the wrong people, is absolutely critical for success or failure. It is so determined by the people you're around. And it's hard to imagine the impact. But in fact, I was reading a study that this week about how we draw our energy from those people around us, literally exchanging energy. But if you look at studies, there's studies that I read on this where you are more likely to gain weight if a friend, your best friend in another city where you don't even know your friend is gaining weight, then you're likely gaining weight. I mean, it's an extraordinary fact. So obesity spreads to friends was an article that I read in the New York Times. And there's all these studies on this. It's fascinating. In fact, I now, if I'm gaining weight and don't realize why, I just email my friends and tell them to hit the gym. What's wrong with them?
That's funny.
But yeah. It's absolutely crucial. So it's hard sometimes to say, well, I can't pick the people around me. You know, I have negative relative, whatever. Well, you actually can. You can determine how much time you're going to spend with someone. It doesn't mean that you have to eliminate them from your life completely, though some people that may be needed. It can be a sense of who am I spending time with and who lifts me up. Again, pay attention to my energy. If my energy's up with that person may be positive. Or if they're draining me, you know, the people that are draining your battery, you just have to limit your time with them. And you have to make sure that you're charged up before you're around them, because otherwise you're going to get, you could even get sick. I mean, there have been studies, you can get sick. In fact, one article I read said that a 10-minute blast of anger from someone is in your system and affects your immune system for over 6 to 8 hours afterwards.
Wow.
So a little blast of negativity, and for hours and hours and hours, your body is literally fighting off the effects of that hormonally, your immune system. It impacts you for hours to come. Well, if you're spending hours and days with somebody with that kind of negativity, think about what it's doing to your future. So be very deliberate. Who am I around? Do I want to spend time with them? And one of the things I love about technology today and about the world that we're in is we can literally choose to tune in to voices on social media and great podcasts, uplifting books, uplifting posts. I always have quotes in all of my blog posts designed to make you think, designed to give you a lift. Even if people just scan for the quotes, they're going to get value from hearing positive voices. So it may not just be physically the people I'm around, but I can literally create a virtual group of people that I'm around who are going to lift me up and not bring me down. And I think it's extraordinarily important that I do it very deliberately. Who am I around? And the second question is always, where are they taking me?
That's really good. Yeah.
They're taking you somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of wanted to dive more into that question there, because that made me think about allowing people to speak into our lives. And you personally, what does that look like? Are you very intentional with who you allow to speak into your life? Do you have a coach? Do you have a men's group? Do you have mentors? what does that look like on a personal level for you? People who need direction, who have questions, because everybody has an opinion. And I have found that I've had to become more intentional with who I allow to speak into my life. So what does that look like for you, Skip?
Yeah, it's very personal to look at who am I around, who's feeding this into my life, and being intentional. So for me, I have a range of people who I surround myself depending on the topic, right? Okay. So depending on, I look at each area of my life and I say, well, where am I growing spiritually, physically, mentally, socially, emotionally, et cetera. And I look at the people who I want to speak into my life. Now, some of those people may be, again, people that I know that are feeding indirectly. Some may be books and then people I reach out to. And some may be people who have long left this earth, but have left a treasure trove of who they are. Mm. Zig Ziglar, for instance. Mm-hmm. I start listening to Zig Ziglar and he will lift me up the minute I hear his voice. Now, I used to see him in person all the time. He left us, but he's still with us. So you can choose people and you can be very creative about who you're allowing into your life. And I encourage people to do it. I do it regularly. And then I weed that out and I depend. So if I look each year, I look at my goals and what I'm trying to accomplish. And then I think not just the goal setting process, but I think about the supportive structures and processes behind that. And one of that is, okay, for this goal, who is going to help me get there? Who is going to encourage me in this area of my life? And if that person is alive, I might go after that person directly for an interview or read their books or whatever. And if they're not, I may still get their materials and still have that. It also, of course, does not have to be somebody famous or somebody that's published or doing seminars, right? I can surround myself with somebody that I met at work or at church or at the gym or something that will be impactful to me on that goal.
And I think that's such an important caveat there that, yes, it's important to have these people in your life, but it's not one person for every area. You're specifically looking at each area of life, people who excel. I mean, I've talked to people who have one person who helped them in every area of life, and I'm with you, Skip, that it is multiple people needed who excel in those areas to help you get to where you want to be in those areas. I really like that point you made there.
And Adam, I would say what you just said struck a nerve with me, because one thing I tell people that I'm mentoring is, make sure you find experts in the area that you're choosing.
Yes.
I see some people who are saying, oh, I'm listening to this person give me financial advice. And I talk and I learn a bit more. I ask questions and I find out the person that you're getting this advice from thinks that they're a great investor, but they're broke. Mm. They have bills stacked up and they struggle so much. Now, maybe you're learning from their struggles, but let's be very clear. You may be learning from the wrong person. So make sure you're finding somebody who's successful in the area that you choose.
That's an important point too, for sure. Get to know who you're learning from and do some research. Absolutely. Kind of wrapping up here, but I would be mistaken if I had you on the show and didn't dive into the topic of leadership just because of your knowledge in the area and your experience in the area. So one of my last questions here, you could take your time on this. It's a broad question, so I'm just going to kind of let you think about it, talk us through it. But there's so many attributes that makes a leader great. So what is one to three things? What are one to three attributes of a leader that could take a leader from being good to great? What, in your opinion, makes a great leader?
Well, let's do three more hours on that one.
that's a loaded question.
It's there, a loaded question.
I wanted to hear from you while I have you here. And I think that some things here could challenge people. And we really have to take an honest look at ourselves. It's really difficult sometimes to be honest with ourselves and to look at maybe some things that you're going to talk about here and evaluate ourselves accordingly and make changes accordingly. Because I do this because I'm curious about how people work, what people think about, what make people tick. That's why I bring people like you on the show, because I'm just curious to see what you have to say. But listeners want to become better. I want to become better. And I think some things you might mention here, if we're not already doing it, it's going to challenge us to become better.
Sure. Well, I write a lot about servant leadership, and I write about the 9 qualities of a servant leader. I think servant leadership is where it's at, frankly.
Yes.
But, you know, I would start off by saying, as you asked the question about what makes a good leader, is for a leader to realize, first and foremost, it is not about you. Mm. And it's so important, because as leaders, they think, well, I need to develop my strength, my abilities, et cetera, et cetera. And that's true, but it's not about you. It's about your team. It's about others. It's about the mission. It's about your values. And if you orient yourself toward others and serving others in a servant leadership kind of way, you will have a completely different orientation than leaders of the past that thought, this is about me.
Hmm.
I also think that it's important to know that it's not about your position.
Mm-hmm.
And leadership is not positional. The greatest leadership is personal. And if you think about that, right, if you think about, and I say, well, who are great leaders? When we think about great leaders, from Martin Luther King Jr. to Mother Teresa, you're going to find people who didn't have a position, didn't have the ability to direct people and tell people what to do and issue edicts, but instead they had a lasting impact because of their personal leadership and because of who they are. I always say that personal victories precede public victories.
Hmm.
Personal leadership always precedes public leadership. And so leading myself is where it starts, with my own disciplines, and then I can lead and serve others in a better way if I'm focused on them.
That's so good.
And I think leadership is about inspiring others to be more than they thought possible, and to take looking at them and saying, well, what are your skills and what's possible for you? And can I make all of that happen and then expand on it even beyond what you wildly think?
Hmm.
Am I putting you in your sweet spot? And I found the greatest leaders are, we're not thinking about the leader. We're not thinking about the leader's charisma and the leader's ability to do this and that and whip a crowd into a frenzy. That's not sustainable. What's sustainable is when a leader looks out and says, to accomplish this mission and these goals, who's on the team? Do I have the right people? What are their strengths? Am I using them in their strength zone? What are their weaknesses? Am I limiting how much time they have to spend there and bringing someone else there alongside them to cover for that, so that everyone's in their strong strength zone? And if they are, then the whole team lifts, because everybody's in that spot where they feel like they're not even working, because they're just contributing and they're working on each other. And the leader then can be more humble, more in the background, and can be comfortable in watching everybody do their part in the overall effort. And so, yeah, it's not about you. It's not about a position. It's not about your ability to build yourself up. In fact, it's the reverse of all of those things.
That is perfect, Skip. I was hoping you would touch on servant leadership, because this will be in season 3, and I've had a bunch of guests on here, but no one has yet touched on servant leadership. So thank you for touching on that point, because it really is all about others. And that is just a perfect way to end the show. It has me thinking, and I hope it has listeners thinking, about what are we doing for others right now? What are we doing for others today? And that is a challenge in itself. That is a reminder in itself that all of us can take and run with. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. This has been great to have this conversation with you, and all of your guests spur me to think differently. So thank you for the variety.
Yeah, absolutely. And the book is called The Book of Mistakes. Everybody go pick up a copy today. It is a wonderful book. Last question for you, Skip. Where would you like to send people to find out more about you and your work?
SkipPritchard.com has everything. And there's no T in Pritchard, although I think it can get you there anyway. But SkipPritchard.com.
All right, Skip. Thank you again for coming on the show.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you for tuning in. I hope you got something out of these ideas. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss an episode.